Om Shanti. There are so many reasons for me why I really love to come to Madhuban each year. And I can remember in the early days when we used to come perhaps in the late 70s or early 80s, Baba would describe just how much enthusiasm we had. And he would say that we would come to Madhuban, we would go home, and the first thing we started to do was to save to come once again. There's so many magical feelings about coming to this place. And one of the wonderful things which I find is just to be a part of the world family. And before I became a BK, I think like many of us, I was a searcher and a thinker. And I used to keep a diary. And I can remember for almost over a year or two, in my diary I used to have this imagination going on that actually I was young at the time. But my thought was that young people from all corners of the world would perhaps surrender their national identity, their religious identity, and just come together as one force to serve the world. And it was like a dream. I don't know what you were like when you were young, but I was always a dreamer, and perhaps I still am. And it always feels to me that when I come into this wonderful international family, that it really is that family that has come together to serve the world. And the feeling which I have when I come these days is that as we watch or observe everything in this world disintegrating so fast, and there's so many barriers between people, so many things which are pulling people apart, the hearts of the family just grow closer and closer. And one of my feelings of just being here this year is just the wonderful closeness and really like a spiritual army, an extraordinary family. One of the things which has always been a fascination for me, even before I became Baba's child, was, if I could describe it, as just spiritual experience. Even as a teenager, I always had this feeling. I used to wonder how I could change the feelings in my mind, how I could have like a new experience in my mind. And when I left school, I began to travel. I in fact started university and I began to study architecture for a year or so, but there was something inside me that I couldn't quite describe. There was like a restlessness. I just felt there was something I didn't know, and so I just left my study and I began to travel. And it ended up for about 4 years I just wandered the world, literally. And it took me through Southeast Asia, a long time in India, the Middle East, Africa, Europe, many places. And unconsciously, I often found myself living in spiritual communities, religious communities. You know, I never really decided I want to go there, but somehow I ended up living in with Buddhists and with Muslims and with Christians and with Sikhs and with yogis in India and all sorts of things. And as I began to have many of these experiences, one thing became very important for me. And I loved the ideas that I was told because I had a deep feeling for philosophy and, you know, religion, I suppose. But it always seemed to me that there was a lot of knowledge and there was a lot of faith, but there was very little inner feeling or inner experience. And the more I began to travel, that became my quest. I really wanted to try to move through that threshold of just knowing information, knowing ideas, having a belief in something and make it something, a tangible feeling inside of myself. And I often feel for me that when I sit to meditate, even at this time in my Brahman life, that what is meditation? To me, in a way, it's just taking Baba's knowledge, taking Baba's ideas, taking Baba's wisdom, and massaging them into my experience so it becomes my experience. I take these ideas and I convert them into a new feeling inside of me. And I feel that, you know, meditation really has three simple steps, perhaps. The first is to know. The second is to believe. The third is to experience. And many times I feel that the first two are easy. The first two sometimes we can get in a second, even after a week, or at the most a couple of months. It's easy to know and it's easy to believe. But how long does it take to really develop the art of creating deep spiritual experiences in the soul? Because I often feel that when I reflect on my own spiritual journey, it's these experiences which are the great sustenance that keeps the soul going. And I can remember that in mid-1980s, and I don't know whether Wadi remembers this, but I think many of us came to Madhavan and we met Baba. And I think in the mid-1980s, we were just starting to meet Baba in Om Shanti Bhavan. And Baba told us all to do the course again. Do you remember that? And it was, you know, caused a little bit of a rumble amongst everybody. I had been a Brahmin for 10 years. And Baba said, do the course again, but he called it the realization course. Because Baba was saying that to us as foreigners, that we do know and we do have good faith, but we don't have deep experiences. And so Baba wanted us to redo the course and create new experiences on the basis of doing that. And what I remember so clearly from that muli, because it's like, you know how sometimes things that Baba says, so many things, but some just strike such a deep chord in the soul, you know, when it just hits you so deeply, it resonates as a truth that's so profound. And I remember Baba said that each point of knowledge has an associated experience. That each point of Baba's knowledge has within it, if we unlock that knowledge, waiting for us is a new feeling, a new experience in my mind. And that really just engaged me so much because I really began to, this was something which went back to even my pre-Gyan days, that I really wanted to just move through the knowing and believing and extract all the attainment, the experience, the fragrance in my mind through going into the depth of that knowledge. And one of the words which we use all the time on this journey is churning. You know the word churning. And often, I think in English, the implications of it are that it's sort of a, you know, an intellectual play with ideas. It's almost like an academic approach to using knowledge. And yet, really, the more I go on, the more I feel that when Baba uses the word churning, he actually means experience. What he means is to start to play with the knowledge, think about it to such a deep level that I start to extract the juice of a new experience out of that idea. Just imagine the point of knowledge is a piece of fruit, and as I start to really absorb the depth of it, it's like I start to taste the sweetness of that juice. It's a taste, a fragrance in my mind. And I've always found that, you know, such a wonderful, I suppose, challenge to really try to take those points of knowledge and try to absorb the fragrance from them. And even the first piece of knowledge which we give in the course, that I am the soul. You know, I once read research in Australia, which was, it did a survey of people's beliefs, and they were saying that 80% of people believe there's something more than a physical body. That's incredible, isn't it? Don't really know what, but just believe that I am something more. So in a sense, almost 80% of people have some sense of being a spirit, a soul, a psyche, whatever. And that means so many of us do. So I have the knowledge. Baba gives us the knowledge of the soul. And I have faith in that. But when I actually know that I'm a soul and I realize it, the experience which happens automatically is an incredibly deep state of peace. And so it's like sometimes when I'm talking about the aim of meditation, I tell people openly, the aim of meditation is not to experience peace. No. The aim of meditation is to know and experience who you are. And when you experience who you are, the automatic byproduct is an incredibly deep state of calm, an unbreakable state of peace within the self. And so it's like once we have the realization and experience who I am, peace is automatic. And it's almost like we have to start this adventure of unlocking each aspect of knowledge so that I can create these experiences. Even the idea of the three worlds. You know, how much do we just listen that my home is the incorporeal world? We listen to it, we like it, we believe it, but how much do I experience it? Often I have the feeling that if I absolutely identify with the home, then what will be the result? When I really deeply feel it inside me, there will be this extraordinary sense of living in this world but detached from this world. So many of us have a problem with feeling detached. You know, we're always trying to psych myself into it. You know that I must be detached, I mustn't be influenced, but I still am. You know that? It happens. And I think the natural consequence when I've absorbed the depth of the knowledge of my home is that automatically the soul identifies with that home and I feel less influenced by the world. And so it's like, I think Baba is wants us to really extract that deep essence, because I find the more we have these experiences, it really gives an incredible strength to the soul. And if you were to ask me, what are the main differences between the path of bhakti and the path of knowledge, I would say it is almost this. The path of bhakti is about knowing and believing. And just when we know and believe, that's when we can become very dogmatic. But I often feel that the path of knowledge is what I call the third dimension, where there's not just the knowing and the believing, there's the experiencing. And that's the real quest in this life, to convert the knowing and the believing into my own deep feelings and my own experience. When you just have something which has, you know, is two-dimensional, let's say it's just flat, it has no depth. When there's knowing and believing, there's not much depth, and so we become very dogmatic in the way we approach things. But when we have experienced the third dimension, that gives so much depth to the soul. And many times I feel that we have these strong bhakti sanskaras of knowing and believing. And so sometimes that's the basis of my sustenance in Brahman life. But it doesn't give us the real strength which we really want. And I can remember quite some years ago thinking about this experiential thinking, which in a sense is like meditation. And how much do I have that ability? Because I think the way we are educated is that we learn the art of rational and logical thinking. And it's very important to have that. It is helpful. And that's often what I feel is the legacy of science today, that we take an idea and we logically see it through to a conclusion. It's a wonderful ability. We also have the art of creative thinking, where we take an idea and we just let it just grow and embellish, just, you know, really spread itself. And that's what we learn from the arts and business, to sort of really create and break through new horizons and new boundaries. I think most of us are okay at this logical thinking and creative thinking. But experiential thinking, where you take an idea and convert it and massage it into my feelings, it's like we've lost the art. And sometimes I think that in this life, it's one of the processes. It's like I have to learn to re-educate myself how to really experience Baba's knowledge. And one of the reasons I feel is that, and I remember even Baba saying some years ago, that experience, spiritual experience, is the great sustenance in this life. And I think, you know, what is the most natural motivation in this life? What's the easy way to have enthusiasm? What's a way that, you know, effort making isn't through force, but it's just something natural? I think when you have a new experience, when you have something, a powerful experience, it's just natural. Motivation is natural. Enthusiasm is something really natural. And if you reflect on your Brahman life and you remember a time perhaps when you absolutely became the bodiless soul, absolutely and totally detached from your body, and how you felt at that time, so close to Baba. Or maybe a time when you felt completely and utterly immersed in the ocean of love, absolutely experienced Baba's love, or a sense of total belonging that I've come home. You know, when you, if you observe your behavior after those experiences, I find that you're completely changed, even for days or weeks. Just a few seconds of experience can change me even forever. They have such an incredible power. Experience is really the great power. And I remember one time, and I think the first or second time I came to India, there was one brother who came with us from the UK, and he was doing the course and actually had a science background. And he'd just done the course in London, and he came to us to India as a speaker at a conference, which was in Delhi. And he was had a lot of questions, and, you know, these questions just seemed to never stop, basically. And I remember we actually got a bus and we drove from Delhi up to Mount Abu. Were you on that bus? Yes, it was. And, you know, I don't know, has anyone caught a bus from Delhi to Mount Abu? Let me tell you, it's an experience. Anyway, this brother, it took 22 hours, if I remember, and he just had so many questions, and they were good questions. And he would sit beside somebody and ask questions, and that sort of person would, you know, exhaust that person, then he'd move on to the next seat. And I think by the time we got to Mount Abu, he'd been around the entire bus, you know. And it was just like one question answered, and so many more came. And when we got to Mount Abu, I can remember us saying, well, what do we do? What will we do with him? You know, how can we help him? And someone suggested we take him to Didi Manmohini. And Didi Manmohini, she actually was the co-administrator of the Yagya with Dadiji up until 1983 when she left her body. But she was famous for her drishti. And it was almost like when someone couldn't experience much in meditation, it was like, take them to Didi. And she had this fantastically powerful drishti. And so Julian sat in front of of Didi, and in 2 minutes he had the experience of being a soul. And you know, he was a totally changed person. It was incredible. And I often remember that because, you know, the knowledgeful answers just kept creating more questions. But he had one experience and it like completely changed the soul. And I think that is the power of spiritual experience. It shifts things inside us. And I remember once I asked Jagdish Chanda, I asked him, I had a wonderful experience with him because he is or was the senior brother of the whole Yagya. And one time I thought I'd really like to get to know him, and I asked him if I could go and stay with him in Delhi for a few days at Shaktinaga. And he said it's okay. And when I arrived, he said that he was quite busy and he could sit with me for an hour while I was there. And I can't remember how long I stayed. But what happened that night was we began to talk and we went on into the wee hours of the morning. And it was extraordinary. And I remember asking him, what do you consider the most important thing in this life, on this journey? And straight away he said, new experiences, to develop the art to create new experiences, because that maintains that motivation and enthusiasm. And I remember that many times because I think what happens is that, you know, the level of experience often is a lot when we first start. It's like a sort of a graph and it begins to level out. And sometimes we even live off the memory of our spiritual experiences. And I think the mind is a very tricky thing sometimes. It's very fickle. And in the sense, the mind needs experience. It's hungry for experience. It's the food for the mind. And if the mind doesn't get it spiritually, subtly or not so subtly, it starts to revisit the old ways to create feelings or experiences. And we know that, you know, this is what sometimes happens, is that the mind starts to seek the old experiences in different ways. And what are the old experiences, the ways, because the mind needs experience, sensual experience, I would say firstly, emotional experience, secondly, and even intellectual experience. And so when the well of spiritual experience becomes a bit dry, the soul starts to revisit these things once again, and it can easily happen. Because sensual experience is really the culture of this modern world. The whole of material world is built around it, isn't it? And I often have this sort of image of in my mind of the soul, the unlimited soul, this extraordinary eternal being, being locked up in this jail where it's really can only experience through the five senses. It's like such a limiting thing. But for some reason, that's what we've done to ourselves. Only just through tasting, seeing, feeling, etc., touching, the soul has locked itself in this sort of sensual trap, and it's like a bondage. And sometimes the mind revisits, because even though it is limited experience, it is experience. Or even emotional experience, which I think comes from our relationships. You know, all the feelings of relationships, even, you know, of belonging, of support, all those feelings, sometimes subtly the soul revisits those because whatever we feel, it is experience, and even intellectual experience too, is sometimes very satisfying. There's nothing wrong with those things in one sense. But when the soul sort of, if it stops experiencing spiritually, sometimes it's like it goes back into that world. And I heard a story once about a little fish. And a scientist was doing an experiment with this little fish. And the scientist had this fish in a tank. And he would feed the fish up one end of the tank and the little fish would swim around. And he always knew that up one end of the tank he would be fed. So, you know, that was where he got his dinner. And then after a while, the scientist put a glass wall in the middle of the tank. And where the little fish used to be fed was up one end, and the little fish was in the other part of the tank. So he started to swim to get his food, and every time he did, he'd knock his nose on the glass. Donk, donk, you know. So after a while, he began to realize he's not going to get through, so he just began to swim just in half the tank. Then the scientist took out the glass. He took it out. So the fish could swim in the whole tank, but he didn't. And even though he was putting food in one end, the little fish died of starvation. Very sad story, I know. Probably not a very good story, but sometimes I think it's like us. We had the food of spiritual experience, and then as in the second half of the cycle, we just began to swim in one part of experience through the senses, the emotional and other experiences like that. And that's all we know. That's all we know. And so we keep swimming in that area because we've lost the art, really, of really going deep into that spiritual experience. Because I think, you know, to me, spiritual experiences is like, and even Daddy, what was Daddy saying to us last night? It was quite powerful, wasn't it, when she was saying, you know, how many Brahmins really experience the self after many years? I think Daddy loves to really push us with those ideas. But it's true in a sense that have we really sort of taken that power of experience of the original self, the original qualities, the original virtues, the original powers, the original relationship with Baba? Have we learnt to wash the mind in those feelings? It's like the soul dipping in the pure essence, the pure experience of peace, of purity, of all those sorts of qualities. That's such a great power for the soul. And I think is really when Baba talks about attainment, this is what he really means. The soul just becomes overflowing with those feelings or those spiritual attainments. And many times I think that, you know, Baba has used that analogy, if I can say, that the mind is like a laboratory. And I love that idea because it sort of implies that it's a place to experiment. And, you know, I'm amazed sometimes that even observing myself that in service and things I can be so creative, but sometimes in my own mind, with my own thoughts, what do? We just use the same old thought patterns. Have you noticed that? And sometimes some of us, I remember Ramesh Bhai was saying that from Bombay, that sometimes we, how we learnt in the 7-day course, the commentaries we listen to, that's almost what we do time and time again in my Brahman life. Is there any wonder that the mind goes flat in a way? The mind is such an extraordinary thing. And as far as I'm aware in science today, of all the areas of science, the one area which is lagging behind is the understanding of the mind itself, the thing which is creating all those other areas of science. And I've read a bit about it. And I read recently that one man said that we can speak 200 thoughts a minute, but we can think 500. So much is happening in our mind. I don't know actually how they count these things. I never know. But all it's saying is there's an incredible amount of activity happening here. And in psychology, they say that we are aware on 7 different levels at any given moment. This is such an intricate instrument. And yet I wonder, you know, what sort of relationship I have with my mind. Even Baba sometimes says it can be your own best friend or your own worst enemy. Sometimes when we're so close to Baba, the fragrance in the mind is so sweet. But when the mind goes on a roll of all sorts of other thoughts, we just know it can just go all over the place. And I don't know whether you've ever thought, what will be the feelings in the human mind in the Golden Age? Can I say the deity mind? What will the mind be like in the Golden Age? What do you think? I think it'll be so different from now. I feel there'll be minimal thought and maximum experience. It's almost like that the thoughts are just the trigger to create the fragrances in the mind, that the mind will be so light and so pure and so fragrant, and we are 100% the master of that energy. It's like there's no thought that doesn't have any value. Every single thought has value, thought pattern, and it will just create associated feelings, and it's those feelings which are really the joy of life. And yet, as we come down the cycle, such a state of mastery, we become the victim, we become the slave of my own mind. And when we think of the speed of the human mind now, it's incredible, isn't it? It's just like, I don't know, it feels like it's just on this ever-increasing speed. And sometimes I have this image of, you know, the spaghetti junctions they have, like in different parts of the world when there's lots of roads and they all meet together. I think that famous one in Los Angeles where there's about 20 roads, you know, all those roads coming in and everywhere. I often think of that's the mind and all these little cars, some are racing, some are stopped and blocked and some are tooting their horns, and they're all our thoughts and all this. It's like this incredibly complex state which is happening. And yet what Baba does is that he comes, he says, children, the mind is a laboratory. He gives us wisdom and he starts to suggest to us to start to put new thought patterns in our mind, not just for the sake of understanding, but to begin to extract the experience from those thought patterns. Because as far as I understand, this simple process of the mind is that thoughts create feelings and experience. And it's the feelings which are really the great power for the soul. And even recently I was thinking that our Baba's teaching is becoming so refined, in the sense that when Baba first began to teach in the late 1930s, it was almost like Baba said, children, stop impurity at the level of action. He said, no matter what, don't put anger, don't put lust into action. And then, of course, he began to talk about thoughts, but especially when Baba became avyakt, he began to talk about the karma of thoughts and not to, you know, put impurity even into thought, and the effect of impure thoughts, the karmic effect, I lose my mental joy. But often now I feel it's almost like Baba's giving us the education of feelings. He's actually, a lot of the mulis over recent years are all about keeping clean feelings inside, pure feelings, no matter what, for others, as the most natural thing. And I think that it's just like the more that we're able to keep these, you know, pure feelings inside, or we can create these pure feelings, that this is just such a great sustenance for the self. And so how do we create spiritual experience? And I think that even for me over the last year or so, one of the main efforts which I've been making is not to think too much about anything. You know, when something happens and the mind begins to run, you know that process that someone says something, some incident happens, and it's like the mind goes from first gear up into third gear and you begin to sort of process, analyze and all this sort of stuff. I've really tried to just let go, stop that at that point, just rather than letting the mind run, because I think that really helps us, you know, it gives us that ability to experience more. And the other night when Baba was talking to us, the little phrase which sits in my mind from that muli and the way it was translated on the night was, I think, something like, become a point, apply a point, remember a point. And I, in a sense, felt that was like the formula for spiritual experience. It was like Baba just gave us the most simple. I love the way Baba brings things down to such an essenceful state, because the first one, become a point. I believe there's like a spiritual law that says, you know, as the amount of spiritual experience I have is directly proportional to my ability to detach from the body and become that tiny soul. The amount of spiritual experience I have is directly proportional to the soul's ability to completely detach from my body. And it's like, back to the first lesson once again, because really, when the soul is connected to the senses, it's like it's under that influence, and it's like the mind becomes flat. But when I become a soul, I detach from the experience of the senses, or that ruling me, and it's then that I start to come under Baba. You know, I detach from the senses. I'm just a bindi. And actually then Baba can have more influence on the soul at that point. And really, the more I go on and listen to the Sakamuli, I just love to get into the mind of Brahma Baba. You know, because where was he coming from? He is the one that, you know, where he put his attention, that's what I often feel, I want to put my attention. And every day he takes us deeper and deeper into the idea of the soul. And I still feel that I've got so much more to understand about the soul. I think sometimes we have such a superficial, we know the knowledge, but the experience is minimal. We haven't converted it. And I can remember a Sakamuli when I first came into Gyan, and it's deeply etched in my mind, because Baba said in that Sakamuli, children wake up in the early morning, sit so quietly, and start to think, who am I? I am a soul. And become smaller and smaller. The soul is so tiny. There is nothing smaller. And become smaller and smaller. You're just a tiny point. And Baba just went on through the whole muli, just like taking us further and further and further away, till the soul just became something, you know, there's nothing more subtle than the human soul. And I just love the way Baba took us on this journey. And I love to do that, because it will automatically take me into a new feeling in my mind. It takes me into new awareness. I know for me that when I'm really in that state of the soul and I listen to the muli, it's absolutely different. It's like I experience what Baba's saying. It's not just information for my head. The muli is supposed to be listened to in soul consciousness. When I started, I was always told the reason we come to meditate before the muli is to really put myself and resonate on the same frequency as the teacher. Because then I grab not just the information, but the whole feelings behind the information. And I can remember last year, we met with Daddy Ratan Mahini in Daddy's cottage here, a group of us. And she was telling us, we said, Daddy, what were the early days really like? What do you remember? And she began to tell us this long story of the amazing attention Baba had towards the first lesson, of going deep into the state of the soul. She said Baba would, whenever he saw us, he would give us that drishti. Are you working as a soul? Are you walking as a soul? Are you talking as a soul? And there was such attention to that. And that was the fragrance in the family in those early days. Because I do think it is a spiritual law. If I want the fragrance of spiritual experiences, I need to go deep into that art of becoming detached from the body and bodiless. But also that second thing, apply the point. To be able to put the brake, the full stop, the point, the full stop to whatever is happening. And I can remember a few years ago, Daddy Jenki saying to us in one of the classes here, that she said the qualification of the eight jewels is someone who can put a full stop in a second. Something happens, you just put the full stop and move on. You know? Rather than that luxury to start to analyze and start to think why, how, you know, all the questioning, you know, that uses up so much energy of my mind and I think keeps me stuck. on a level which doesn't experience much. Just to put the full stop. It's like a training, isn't it? And I can remember once observing Dadiji, and I was just watching her with a group of people, and she came up to somebody, as she did, this is a few years ago, and this person was just really, quite honestly, quite rude to Dadiji, just quite rude to her. And I just saw Dadiji just move on to the next person, and I could see that she didn't allow her mind to run on that incident just for a second. She moved on and she became engaged with the next person. It was almost like I could see that her mind didn't give itself the, you know, I use that word luxury, to start to go into all the whys and hows and why is this person, why they're feeling, what have I done, you know, all that stuff, just to put the full stop. It's just such an important practice, I think. And then Baba was also saying, finally, to remember the point. To remember Baba as a point. And I often feel that the most fundamental need of the human soul is the experience of true love. Often I feel the reason the mind is wandering, seeking, searching, looking, because it's trying to find true love. And what I find for me, my experience is that if I sit and remember Baba and really taste that quality of Baba's love, that purest love from Baba, what I find, it has an extraordinary effect, because I think that's the fundamental need. And when I taste it, it's like the soul almost goes, I'm home. And I find the mind becomes so still. It's almost like the first desire in the human soul is satisfied. I'm home. I just belong to Baba. And the whole soul just goes into such a state of silence. I often feel that love is a great key for spiritual experience. Many. Not just that deep feeling of peace, even such a sense of satisfaction, a deep sense of contentment. And sometimes I like to describe for myself these days that meditation is just giving myself permission to be completely loved by Baba. It's simple. It's just almost sitting in front of Baba and allowing myself to be completely loved. And if there's anything in between, that's what knowledge is for, to start to see what it is and with wisdom remove anything that stops me having the experience of true love. Because that gives an experience to the absolute core of my soul. I find nothing heals me more. If anyone asks me what sustains me in this spiritual life, I always feel it's that pure tonic of Baba's love. And that's like a regular experience I need. And so I feel if I learn the art of becoming bodiless, if I learn the art of absolutely giving myself permission, don't put up any sign of unworthiness. No, it's my right now to be completely loved. And if I just practice applying the full stop, I open this treasure store of divine experiences, spiritual experiences. And I think that we need to experiment, because what I find is that if I'm not creating experiments in the laboratory of my mind, I get back into the old routine mental processes which happen in meditation. And then a lot of bad habits develop. I can tell you one of my challenges, which I'm always trying to deal with, is that sitting in meditation and processing life, I think it becomes such a habit for Brahmins, because you wake up in the morning, so much happens, you interact with people, you do things, so many feelings, you don't have time to process what's going on. So when you sit quietly, what happens? all of that stuff comes onto the screen of the mind and I start to work through it. And so what happens is that I start to develop the habit of using meditation time to process my life, not actually to have a deep connection with Baba. You know how that can happen? Or even planning or whatever. And actually processing is necessary. But I do relax and I feel better, but I'm not really taking that incredible power from Baba or having, you know, deep spiritual experiences. And that's why I think that Baba encourages us to sort of experiment, almost see my mind as a laboratory and start to put thought patterns in and play with them. And one of the things I think we can learn from science is that scientists will keep experimenting and then don't see it as failure. They will do it 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times until they get where they want to. And sometimes I think we have to keep experimenting. If I want an experience, keep experimenting with different thought patterns and keep invoking new feelings. You know, I can remember when I first started, yes, I had an experience of peace, I had an experience of love, but I actually used to think, what are the feelings of purity? You know, when the soul ends up at the end of the cycle with all the most gross sanskaras emerged, okay, intellectually, I love the idea, but how do you massage that into an experience? What are the feelings of purity? And sometimes I can remember sitting and thinking that in the soul is a blueprint of purity. It's sitting there. It's sitting in the subconscious. It may be submerged deeply, but, and it's almost like I just began to sit there and invoke that feeling. And I really began to taste the feelings of purity, the incredible sense of cleanliness and a self-esteem which was just so natural. It almost, the feeling, it re-emerged the dignity in the self. But I just kept having to sit there and just sort of almost asking Baba to help me re-emerge these sanskaras so I can create that feeling. It's like I sometimes have to revisit it many times. And so for me, I think there's some experiments that I have to do on a regular level, like becoming the tiny soul, just sitting. And I think, to me, I love to do that. I love to do that because it takes me into such a state. But one of the experiments which I've been doing over the last few years is I've been fascinated with the idea of being incorporeal because of the three words that Baba offered when he became avyakt. That was the first word. Three things. And even I can remember asking Didi Manmohini, the one who had the powerful drishti, I said, Didi, what's the main effort that you make? And she said, to be incorporeal. And you know, once again, you know, how much does that sit as a point of theory in my mind? Meditation being the process of taking the theory and creating a practical feeling. And so I've really been trying to create the feeling. What does it feel like to be like this non-physical energy sitting in this huge physical world? In this body which is made up of millions of little physical building blocks. I'm actually a different type of energy. I'm an eternal energy. I'm a non-physical energy. And it gives the most wonderful experience of being uninfluenced. You know, I remember when I first began Gyan, I began to realize just how sensitive and easily influenced I was by everything around me. And we don't want to be like that, but often we try to force it. But I found that the more the soul actually tastes the state of being incorporeal, it's the most natural sense that nothing will affect me. It just doesn't influence me. The things of the material world just don't. It's like it lessens and lessens. It's just like sitting in that state and feeling, well, what is it? What is the energy of being non-physical? Because actually I'm not all these things. It's like playing with these ideas. Even one other one I love to do is Baba's vision on the soul. Because to me, that's truth. What Baba sees in me is true. My own vision on me fluctuates. My own vision on me will often identify with only a small part or certain sanskaras that have recently been formed in the soul. It's limited. And sometimes I think that the whole of the journey is actually bringing my vision up to Baba's vision. Baba reveals his vision in the Avyak Mulis. He says, children, you're this, you're that. I sometimes wonder, we just think it's just this wonderful praise and we just think, oh, it's so nice of you to say that, Baba, but it's actually reality. It is reality. Where I'm at now is not. It's the soul in a conditioned state at the end of the cycle. And so sometimes just to sit in front of Baba's eyes and feel the purity of vision and have the courage to accept that that is the truth. Because sometimes we feel it's honesty not to accept it. But it is actually who I really am, that original, elevated and pure soul. But then I've done other experiments too, and I remember once, you know, Baba says to us all the time that the cycle repeats identically. And when, you know, he used to sometimes, he asks us, you know, have we met before? And we all say, yes, Baba, we have. We believe it. But what I began to do once, for a period of time, everything I did, and as I met people, as I went around my life, I was just thinking that I've done this before. This is a direct repetition. And, you know, I had an amazing feeling of being the master of the drama, not the victim of all the events and situations. There was this incredible empowering, the more I sort of started to feel the idea of being sort of here, last Kalpa. It was something really special. And do you remember also a few years ago, Baba was talking about spinning the cycle, those five stages? What was it, eternal, original, worship-worthy? Brahman, angel. And even Baba gave us that to experiment, to sit down and play with those. And I began to think that it's like those five sets of sanskars are still in the soul, but they're submerged maybe. The more recent set of sanskaras is that sanskar that's influencing my intellect and my activity. And when I start to move through and I taste the eternal sanskaras, maybe of peace, the original sanskara of purity, the worship-worthy ones of my own dignity, self-respect, as I start to taste them, I'm less influenced, attached, identifying with the present set of sanskaras. It's like I begin to explore all the sanskaras in the soul that are sort of submerged at the moment. Because the whole part sits in the soul. The whole part is there. And so Baba gives us these experiments, even in the confluence age, you know, to really start to think deeply about the confluence age and the value of this time. For me, I often feel that this is the most magical time of the whole cycle. There's no doubt about that. We all feel that. But the most magical time of the magical time, if I can say that, is still to come. I really believe the few years we still have will be the most extraordinary time in the whole cycle. We will watch Baba's revelation. We will attain our highest stage. And it's an extraordinary thing. It's almost like the whole part is sitting in the subconscious of the soul. What I'm finding is that drama is invoking the soul to step onto the stage to play its highest part. All the religions of the world, remember the angels and so on, they come onto the stage to play their part. It's us. And somehow you feel as the drama's moving so fast, drama, even the souls of the world, are invoking us to play our part. And I often think, am I ready? You know, and this experience of the value of time, just how precious time is at the moment. I think that Baba really wants us to use our time to really experience deeply. And I know for me, I always feel it's what sustains me. To sit in silence, to start to put in the laboratory of my mind new ideas and try to pull, you know, just pull the juice, the essence of those ideas into my own experience. Because even I think when I experience a lot, naturally I can donate to others. And I feel one of the most serviceable things about the BKs for me is the atmosphere we create. I think there's many people that give much better talks than us. There's brilliant workshop leaders, all that sort of stuff. But something I feel that virtually no one can do like Baba's children is create the vibes. We are really experts at creating atmospheres. And I feel when we sit in yoga together, the atmosphere we create is so palpable that when people come into that atmosphere, the atmosphere speaks to their original sanskaras. You know, it touches something deep, and even the soul doesn't know what it is, but it feels something. I'm sure there's many in this room that took birth through experience. We had an experience. It was like, I can remember there's one sister who walked in the door of the center in Australia, and she just opened the door and she looked around like she almost saw something. It was the atmosphere, actually. And she just felt it instantly. It was like the vibration spoke to her original sanskaras. And I can remember once a group of us were sitting with Baba, some teachers in the early days, or people, running centers, whatever. And Baba spoke to us, and then he said, any questions? And no one asked any questions, so I thought, oh, well, we have to ask something. So I just said to Baba, I put up my hand and said, Baba, what sort of service should we be doing? And the first thing Baba did was he looked at me very sweetly and said, I've already told you. And then he said, in foreign countries, just create a powerful atmosphere. Just create a powerful atmosphere, because this speaks to an old soul sanskars. Not even an old soul. It resonates. It goes in. Sometimes, you know, I feel an experience networks with the original sanskaras in the soul, and it reawakens something. Even intellectually, the soul can't sort of say what it is, but it reawakens something. And what we're thinking in Australia this year of doing a project, because we did, you know, those mind-body-spirit festivals, which often happen around the world. And last few years, what we've done is they've given us a meditation room, which seats about 40, 50 people in Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane. And for 4 days, every, I think, 20 minutes or half an hour, a group of people just come in and they just sit down. We speak to them for just 2 minutes, just minimal essence of what the meditation, and then we have a commentary. And it's in the middle. You know what they're like, all these pavilions and all these microphones going, you know, people, it's such a noisy environment. And when I was there last time, I asked the people at the end, I said, did you experience everything? Because there was so much noise. And half of them put up their hand and said they did. Because I think Baba has said in foreign countries to create an environment, an atmosphere that can give people experiences. And so we were thinking of, because it's a vast country, and we thought, well, there's so many parts of this country, even though it's not a huge population, that we haven't been to, that we might just create these, what we call peace points. Just were people, like a little mini mobile center in a way, where we just go to markets, we'll go to festivals, we'll go to shows, we can go to anywhere really, businesses, organizations, just, you know, whatever, and just set up a little like meditation room and just create the atmosphere and almost allow the atmosphere and Baba to do the work on soul sanskaras. I think we're at that time. And if the soul in its memory track has the sanskaras of the first half of the cycle, whatever, they will start to, I really believe that something will touch, something will connect with the soul. And even if it doesn't, you know, whatever part the soul has to play, that our specialty is to create an atmosphere and really donate an experience. And I do think that it is an art form. That's what I found, because I do find personally it's so easy to get into habitual ways of meditating, and I just get stuck in similar thought patterns in just processing or planning. And sometimes I need to remind myself to really create an experiment and then execute the experiment and start to sustain myself with new feelings. Because I think this is the richness in Brahman life. And I think that when a soul has deep experiences, even Baba once said, the soul becomes powerful and the soul becomes stable. And that in itself becomes our service, just our being in that state of stability. Because my foundation is not just a belief, I've experienced it. That's when it's really powerful. And that's when I think that others get a really powerful experience from us. So anyway, I think probably it's time for us to meditate. It's 7 o'clock.